Who's your favorite Thomas character?
Let's see.
Yeah.
Green.
Green.
Green, Percy. I don't know what that would lead to, or if anything. I mean, hell, at the end of this ride, I may just be like, screw this. I'm going to just, take my savings and build apps or games or furniture or something. Just like totally like change, because it was. So for me, this is like a goal that I've achieved now. When I left Bonnier, and I was working with a friend of mine, he was like kind of doing some sales for me. And one of the things we kind of created together was, I wanted to be right where I'm at now, position where I had a team and everything. And of course, what I thought it would look like would be like Zentech turning into this, but found, this guy had the business, but no way to execute it, no way to, really service his clients. And so by joining forces, not only was it like, boom, okay, so spooky, almost like The Secret, right? Like I said, this is what it was going to be. And next thing I know, I found myself exactly there. And that's sort of the nature of these things. I don't put any magical, I don't think it's magical or anything. I think it's just where you put your attention is kind of where you end
Well,
up.
it's that's that book, The Secret. That was one of those things they talk about, is like if you're looking for it, it's going to find you. And The Secret didn't invent it. It's like many thousands of years old. But the modern example is from The Secret.
Right.
You put out that energy and it's going to come back to you.
Exactly. So now that I've achieved that, I'm like, okay, great. This is cool. And I still have to master it. Like it, I just kind of started that part of it. It's not like boom, finish line and it's over. Like now that I've kind of achieved it, and want to master it, I don't know what to even say would be next. Like I got to where I wanted to be, so it's kind of an interesting position to find myself in, that whatever's next is going to be something else. I mean, I've always said, oh, I want to write a book or something, or I want to, do more speaking engagements and those types of things. And I think that'll come and everything. And I've been starting to write a little bit more, not a lot more, but a little bit more blogging, a little bit more here and there. It's not like my Twitter output is slowed down. Though I've tried to spin up more original content than before, 140 characters at a time, if you will. But yeah, I'm kind of like, I don't know. It's just I've never been at this kind of like nexus of achieved goals, really challenging, intense situations, and also like an empty whiteboard that just needs to be filled with something new, and all at the same time. So it's pretty intense.
So, we've been talking for a little while now, but the audience is just sort of joining us. So I'm going to try to catch them up in a non-conversation specific way. It's really interesting something you said before about, there's almost nobody on the planet that could do your job the way you're doing it right now. And the second thing was sort of about, you sort of put out this energy, like I'm looking for this kind of a job. It's almost like you sort of like told the universe, like, I need a job that lets me do these things right now, and it just sort of happened for you.
Yeah, so to provide a little bit of context, so I've been self-employed more or less for the last 7, 8 years. Freelancer would be mostly apt to probably describe the business of it, right? Sole proprietor, one guy, doing everything, from sales to delivering the service or the product or whatever. And a couple of years ago, when I left sort of a corporate-y gig, where we met, I kind of was like, okay, here's the goal. I want a team. It's going to be about this size, and I'll be leading them on really cool projects. And of course, I thought it would look like it being happening to my business and me growing that into it. But when I moved here, and kind of actually ran into somebody I corresponded with online at a conference, and he needed some help. He wanted me to take a look, and You know, long story short, I became, you know, the technical lead for his entire business. I'm officially known as the chief technology officer, but more affectionately known as the head nerd in charge, HNIC. So it's interesting that it never looks the way you think it will. But when you put that energy out there, or you just said, you put your attention on something, and even like it never felt like I was actively pursuing it per se. And maybe that's why it didn't happen for my own company, as it were. Even though, I mean, there was plenty of I had regular contractors that I was working with and other collaborators and cohorts and all kinds of on again, off again relationships and stuff, but nothing really, really stuck. And, part of it was 'cause I think of the remoteness, not to get too much on a tangent, but, relating it to something that's near and dear to, both of our hearts, but the co-working movement, there is something very powerful about being in the same room as somebody. And I know plenty of people that run awesome companies, fully distributed teams, you know, I mean, even like super nerds who are like, hooked up in terminal multiplexing environments, all writing Ruby at the same time in two Emacs windows and, you know, and just crazy paired programming remotely stuff. Right. And it totally works for them. But I find that, you know, you don't have the serendipity. You don't have those ongoing daily touch points that not only build the confidence in the team, but the confidence in the team in each other. Like each member really gets a sense of who that other person is and where they're going to crack under pressure and where they're going to, you know, where you can count on them. And you get enough of those behind you, and I mean, any, you know, the team can create anything. You know, they can accomplish anything.
Yeah. So if you listen to two of the things you just said, one to me makes me think of this guy, Daniel H. Pink. He has written a lot of literature out there that directly applies to people who are freelancers, people that work remotely, people that are sort of making their own stuff. Right now he writes a lot for Wired magazine, and probably his sort of like definitive book is called The Free Agent. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's funny because we actually talked about that
6 months ago. Six months ago.
I know it's been a long time since we did another episode. We should start doing this every couple of weeks. And I know I said that last time too, but taking a few minutes out of the day to chat with you is something I want to make time for.
If you listen to Dan Benjamin and John Gruber, it's been 2 weeks since our last episode. 2 weeks. That's all. 2 weeks.
Yep. Cool. Yeah, for sure. So, I bought the book. I haven't actually dived into it. I know Amy has been, my wife has been, skimming it a little bit. I was like, you know, there's lots of chapters I flipped through, and I was like, a lot of this material probably can stand almost on its own. You don't need to read it front to back, but there was a lot of stuff about, women and women entrepreneurs and, you know, as our son gets a little older and is approaching his preschool years, she's going to have some free time and she wants to fill it with some meaningful work. And is still searching for what that might be, and, you know, does a couple of things anyway. But so I offered it to her first, but it was because of our last show that I was on an Amazon binge and, you know, spotted a used copy for a few bucks. So I still can't wait to read it, but I mean, it's obviously pretty easy to get. I think, you know, all said and done, it cost me less than $5 to get it shipped to the house, you know, and that kind of thing. So definitely,
if somebody hasn't read Dan Pink and they're now listening to our second show, just go find it somewhere. It's totally worth it. One thing that he brings up in his book, and now, like, my brain is all melding together of all the books I've read in the last 6 months, but I'm pretty sure it's in Dan Pink's book. He talks about these two concepts. You have the high-tech job, and then you have the high-touch job. And there are certain people that are really good at the high-tech only part of it. And there are even some people I know that they just fall really, really low on the end of the like Asperger's syndrome scale, where they're great programmers, they're great engineers, they're great technical people, but if you try to get them to understand something that's like a little bit more fuzzy, they want you to put it all into binary.
Yeah, they're lacking that emotional intelligence.
And so that's what Dan Pink calls the high touch experience. And he points out in the book that the people that are part of the free agent nation, they need those high touch experiences to complement the high tech experiences. And a question I asked you before is like, don't you really enjoy, didn't you miss working along other side people? And that's why you and I are both invested in the co-working movement globally, is that we see the value in sitting across the desk, whether it's at the coffee shop or in somebody's living room or in a formal workspace, and doing work with other people, whether or not it's on the same task. So it's that high touch mantra that sort of like falls in there somewhere. And I'm not researched enough to be able to put it in the same words as Dan Pink, but what I can say is go read his book.
Yeah, and he actually, if you go to danpink.com, he's got a ton of articles too, just right there for the RSS subscription, consumption. A lot of, yeah, I mean, he, and it's just the whole books, because it was interesting when I found it, and was and when you mentioned it, I thought it was much newer, but it's been around a while, and that was one of his first books, and he's got several since then that builds on this idea. But yeah, the high touch people in our organization are our project managers, and they're like my right hand and left brain half the time. I mean, it's we're focused on shipping product, and shipping projects. They are the ones who work with the people, train them, interact with them, and in a lot of ways. And well, I mean, I still get involved in a lot of that, mostly from a fact-finding mission or helping to define scope in something. They allow the nerds to be shielded and to kind of protect their focus and let them get into the zone, including me. And they go do the high touch, we do the high tech, and then somewhere we meet in the middle and ship people that or ship projects that people seem to really like, not everyone is like the most amazing thing ever, and that's the nature of client work in general. You're working with all kinds of constraints, not even just the budget and the imagination of the customer, but there's time constraints and all types of things. And it's our job to be as creative as possible inside of those constraints. In fact, I've heard more than once that creativity is defined by the constraints that you had to create inside of, right? It's not just a vacuum. It's not just every single option, under the sun that's going to get you there. It's going to be, whittling it down and going, okay, what can I do with three matchsticks, a piece of gum, and this rubber band? I could make a guitar.
Yeah, I mean, a very poignant example of this is if you look at one of these, let's say it's a video game, it's taken years and years and years and years to put out. It's probably because there was no sort of like taskmaster standing there and saying, you're over budget, you're past your deadline, you don't have enough human resources to get this thing done on time. Therefore, the project just goes on forever and ever and ever and ever. There's never like a drop dead point. You just say, if we don't put it out today, we don't make any money. And in a lot of cases with particularly products like that, it you have to have a deadline. Like even if it's a personal project, like for myself, if I can't put like I have to finish this today, I have to finish this weekend, I'll just never finish it. It's something that I just recently worked on as like a podcast directory for my local area in Orlando. It took me maybe 4 years to put that out because it was never a priority. And then just sort of one day I just said like, this still doesn't exist. I need it to exist yesterday. And then I just built it and it was done.
Speaking of which, I noticed Hulk.net launched.
Yeah, you were there when I bought that domain too.
Yeah, I know we brainstormed a couple of things, and I know at one point we were thinking it would be some Central Florida, I guess it's called status.net now. What was it called before?
Laconica.
Yeah, Laconica, exactly. I was happy to sort of see it. I just, ran across it, the blog post earlier today, and was like, oh, look at that. So that's great. And that's, and you bring up a really good point, because I have I use a to-do list called Things. It's a Mac thing, Mac app, I should say. There's like a someday slot.
Yeah, how often do you move something from the, like, next actions to the someday list?
Especially personal projects, a ton of them. So I've got one that I've kept alive that I've spared from going there because I actually do want to revisit it. The deadline's a couple of months away because I actually wrote it. It's a scoring algorithm for Gowalla, the geolocation game, and it's kind of jank right now. But I wrote it in just a few hours and touched it up a few hours after. But it was all right before South by Southwest Interactive last year, and this year I'm gonna over the next several months I'm gonna work on it. And kind of come out with the 2.0 I've always had in mind. A lot of things have changed, even including, like Gowalla getting OAuth and stuff like that I want to use and stuff. And there's a few other tricks. And it's funny because there's one guy a friend of mine who's really into Gowalla just like I am, and he's really into the app. And he's sometimes kept it alive more than I have, but I've kind of committed to a date, and it'll be, by March 10th, I'll already have it all polished up. I'm going to walk in with all the features I wanted in there done. And that's sort of my deadline. And it's been great because I've actually been starting to touch it again. And I got a couple other projects like that. So that's a really good point. I need to put some dates on these things and then stick to them and really push myself. Like you said, like, there's money to be made on the other side, even if there isn't, for some of these personal projects, though, there's still a reward, whether monetary or not. And it's, it's shipping something that I wanted to ship, not that I was asked to ship or that I took on for a customer. But really, really create something for myself. And I haven't done that in a long time. And when I do, it always seems to just get stalled at that 80% point, like that last 20%, I just never get to. And then, of course, because of that, I never, I got more 80% projects sitting around on old hard drives and CD-ROMs than probably like a lot of nerds, maybe I'm not so different, but and a lot of them, the time is long past for those projects, and the 80% that I did get done got shown to a few people and was received, but there's still a lot of, like, I don't know, a little bit of regret, I guess, there. A lot of projects with just that little bit of regret. And, I don't know. Then, like, from a lifestyle design perspective, I'm looking to create a lifestyle that just those kinds of regrets don't happen. And a lot of it just comes down to allowing the time. And then, of course, I get, focusing said time with some kind of constraint. So.
Yeah. I mean, the creativity out of constraints, it's really important. A guy that you and I both know, Darren McDaniel, he recently sort of came up with this new idea, and he, walks up to me one day and says, I want to build this, and I want to build this into a mobile app. And we have yet to put a date on it, and he has a teaching gig now, so he's gotten really busy, and I've gotten fairly busy, and I sort of had, like, my wisdom teeth out, so I had this surgery, and I was out of commission, and we sort of had, like, a focus group type of meeting and talking to some people about what we could do with it, and we haven't seen hide nor hair of this app in, like, 6 weeks. So it's definitely one of those, like, oh, we gotta hurry up and put something out, or we're gonna put this onto the back burner and it'll die there forever. And so definitely stuff like that. So this brings me in no good transition whatsoever to the whole reason why I said I need to talk to somebody today on a podcast, and I really hope that that's Eric. because
Awesome.
I think you would have something good to say. So I'm listening to this podcast. It's called Tunnel Vision, and it's sort of the podcast for people who are community managers, people who they have some sort of a role where they're the human face of something. And a lot of these people are out there now, and they've all got different titles. In my case, I am the rethinking outreach person at our co-working space. Somebody else might be the director of buzz. Somebody else might be the, marketing 3.0 person. I don't care what you call yourself. You're a tumbler. If you listen to this show, you know what I'm talking about. And this particular episode, they were talking today about sort of the whole shift of the music industry from the old system to the newer online distribution. And the guest on the show is saying, at a certain point, you have to realize that when you want to distribute music over a computer, there's one thing that a computer does really, really, really well that all the old systems didn't do very well, which is to make copies of things. So now that copies are so cheap and so free, you can just put them anywhere. So this means that you have to rethink the way that you're publishing this stuff. Otherwise, you're just, things like Napster, things like Last.fm, like BitTorrent, are just going to kill your existing business. So that made me think about what are the other businesses where you can say something really similar because of new models, because of the internet. So one that's really close to me is media, is publishing. If you look at something like a newspaper, right now, there is the author of the article, the writer, and the writer pushes out this one subject, and a lot of times that will be reflecting facts from certain sources or opinions from certain people or quotes from certain people. And in a journalist's mind, those are all considered sources. But one thing that this doesn't really take into account now, whether it's a blog or a printed paper or a magazine article or a freaking iPad app, is that as me as the reader, all I can see is that those 5 or 10 words that you've chosen from that source to sort of like incorporate into the whole narrative. And what's really missing from that delivery is, why can't I now, because we've got hyperlinks, let me go back to the source and see the whole complete unedited spectrum of what was available there. If I'm really, really interested, I should be able to go back and see your entire interview transcript. I should be able to go back and see the whole research paper. And what's really stopping us? And Dave Weiner, who's very famous on the internet, Dave Weiner actually has a word for this concept. He calls it sources go direct. He says everyone at the New York Times who is ever quoted in an article should be given an opportunity to write a blog about whatever it was that they were quoted on.
If they
So
hadn't
truth bomb
already, right?
dropped, react.
That's pretty powerful stuff. Which I wouldn't expect much less from you. You're a master at synthesizing disparate information into the unique point of view that you alone have, sir. So well done. I don't even know what to where to even start or how to even really add to
Well, I
that.
figured I'd started with the music angle because that's your you're I wouldn't say that you're a professional musician, but you definitely have put out albums. You've recorded
Well,
albums and
yeah,
you've published,
I
right?
don't have any, I don't have any albums out, but I am a published musician. I have a couple of tracks on, or like 3 tracks on various compilations. Mostly just because, out of all of my creative output, the one I love the most but practice the least is music creation. Partly because I'm one of the lucky ones that get to practice another creative art, mostly programming. As my full-time profession, and of course I'm a bit of a workaholic, so I get really into that to the to sometimes the detriment of other things in my life, including music. I mean, I have an EP that just needs a little bit of editing and then being sent off to mastering and probably some art being made and that kind of thing. So, and I owned a record label and used to promote various shows and stuff. And I've played, dozens and dozens of times in front of live studio audiences, as it were. I guess I can start with that and then kind of chew on this a little bit as I go. Because, I mean, obviously, this is the first time I heard you put this together. The sake of putting, having to rethink the whole game is happening more significantly than I thought. Like, been helping make the internet for 14 plus years now. And some of this it seems like old hat, and I run into this a lot, especially working with younger developers. Like, they don't have the kind of perspective and history with this stuff, but at the same time, they aren't necessarily, like, it's not lost on them either, right? They may have been experiencing the first waves of the stuff that I was tinkering with, and maybe when they started tinkering as well, we were already, well into, let's say the CSS era or whatever, and that kind of thing. And jQuery, maybe they don't know, have never had to write cross-browser JavaScript, and get to use the frameworks and abstract those things away. But the idea that, things have changed and that the people in the industry have yet to respond to, it's like, I don't know, it's almost like the innovation and the disruption is almost exponential now. And for the longest time, it seemed more linear to me. Like, oh, this is just an evolution of this, which is just an evolution of this, which is just an evolution of that, if you think of even just from we went from a phonograph to, all the way to the MP3, and of course, even then, progress hasn't stopped for that file format either. You got FLAC fans galore and, all kinds of crazy codecs being dreamed up in the open source space, like Chrome and WebM and all that stuff, right? So the idea that we can obviously put any, this abundance, in the digital arena is interesting. And it's been something that I've always kind of watched, right, in the music industry. But what is kind of always gotten me, and I think a lot of people have kind of just wrote off, is that, they didn't get it, they haven't got it. While they may have adopted some kind of digital strategy, mostly because they had no choice. The music industry itself, I don't think has even seen the same kind of revolution that even the publishing platform has seen. I mean,
here is something I'm thinking of now. If you think just specifically about music as a medium, if you look at what somebody like, a popular example would be Trent Reznor has done, where he says, all right, I've put out this album and you can download it for name your price. The name your price thing has been out there. Or if you want to get the vinyl and the collector's edition and the signed poster and who knows what else, you pay this exorbitant price. And he ended up selling a lot of those. But at the same time, that same album, he put out the freaking Pro Tools files and the Soundtrack Pro or whatever other programs are pretty popular out there. And he said, here's the source. If you want to mix your own version of this, you can't really redistribute it per se, but you're welcome to play around with it as long as you pay attention to the licensing. So he turned fans into producers, and it did require that you put in your 5,000 hours in the Malcolm Gladwell sense. But if you know enough to be able to remix those tracks, you now have the ability to do that because the bits are so cheap. You can just push them around, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't think, I don't think it's really, I don't think people, I'll put it this way. Like, the big record labels haven't got it. The small ones, I don't think, have gotten that. And sort of one of the examples that's been kind of jumping up for me is that I think the consumer has already passed it. Like, there is no way you're going to adopt the old system to the new at all. right? People, some people buy MP3s. I'm a bit of an MP3 collector, and get them from a variety of sources, including my favorite source is Bleep.com, because it pretty much carries all the record labels I follow. So when one of my favorite artists releases one, that's where I go to be like, keep making more. Here's $10. I don't, like, I could get the MP3s anywhere, but I'm going to just buy them because I know that most of it's going back in their pockets. But if you look at like Spotify and radio, or what is it, RDIO? I always spell it because the missing A messes me up. But yeah, Pandora and Last.fm, God rest its soul. Like that is, I think people have just moved to this model. Like, why can't I just hear whatever? Why can't I just hit a button and all the good stuff just pours at me? And it's more than radio, and it's more than satellite or anything like that. And it's way more than it's a shift both in how people want to engage with the content, but also such a testament to the distribution that, the internet even allows, right? The bits are cheap and free. But there's something, especially the licensing around this stuff. I mean, there's a reason Spotify isn't in the US, and there's a reason radio isn't quite the same. Since NBC, I think it was NBC, bought Last.fm, it's never been the same, and it's kind of run out of steam, it seems. I mean, there's a lot of neat stuff they still kind of do if you dig into like their labs area, but there's no community management, so there's no reason to really hang out on there. In fact, the only reason I even still use the service is because I really like the scrobbling, and I don't think they've ever really open sourced the scrobbling server, just the other side of it, like the reporter, I guess. I
Well,
don't know, the one
and while I
that
think there
reports
are
back to the
several
server.
other services that have a similar feature, I don't know that anybody else is putting out a service quite like the Audio Scrobbler, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's
And I don't
sort
know.
of stands alone as the one place to collect all your music data. There's not even a desktop app that does it, as far as I know.
Except, yeah, except the, yeah, exactly. Except the less, last of time. I mean, like iTunes tracks your plays, but that's not the same because you don't get the date, you don't get it correlated by song and album and artist and all that fun stuff. And I like that. It's interesting to me, as a music lover, what really are my top 10? When somebody asks, I just go to Last.fm, right? And I kind of wish that Netflix would do that, even just the stuff you stream there, which I've been the last, year is probably like a lot of people. I've gotten really into Netflix streaming, even if it's like, I mean,
Well,
even if it's
have
just
you ever played
basic
with
bad
Boxy
movies.
though?
Yeah, I played with an early
Boxy
beta.
has that built in. It sort of like has your activity stream of what you've been watching, what you might recommend to your buddies, which I guess in Last.fm would be the likes, the loves.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't revisited it in a while. For me, I guess I should, but I don't know. Boxy for me always is like it fits into. It's the thing you put on the computer in your living room, and I've got a mini in my office that pretty much just acts as the iTunes and Netflix computer. And I guess I should throw Boxy on there and look at it again because it was one of the early betas. It was still when you had to like. Request an invite to get access, and I was like, "Oh, this is interesting." And I wasn't really there yet. I was still like, cable. For me, still offered the better product. And at this point, other than a few shows I DVR, Netflix pretty much is where I've been consuming most of my visual entertainment. Even if it's it's for background noise or whatever, but. But for me, there's still an exponential jump, especially for music. Like just getting to the streaming is interesting. The consumers, change. The consumer's idea of how it changed is different. And I haven't really switched over to that. I once went. I had a hard drive. Really, was ended up being the enclosure, thank God. But my music collection was sort of sitting on a hard drive, and I hadn't got replaced the enclosure, and it was. about a year, and I lived off of Last FM Radio, and really at the end of it, I was like, I don't think I could just do this. I only did it because, you know, it was the easiest way to get music. And of course, I was, you know, grabbing stuff here and there too, and creating sort of a second library of music on my laptop. But for me, I'm not there. But and I didn't think I was going to be there for TV either, and I did. And then, you know, that'll I guess gain momentum as more people kind of clue into that. And even, you know, we've got Comcast up here, and they have an iPhone app that is the best TV, you know, channel guide I've ever used. I mean,
does it let you like watch any shows, or it just sort of tells you what's on?
Yeah, it's the guide. Then you click it, and then it's like a remote, a big. I mean, on the iPad, it's like a giant Horkin remote, right, for the cable box. You know, I was pretty impressed. One, that, you know, I didn't change my cable box. I just downloaded an app, and the app was invented way after the cable box was. So I found that interesting. That, you know, this was all being done with software. I imagine that, you know, the app talks over the internet and then zaps the signal. I mean, but
this is where I say hooray for the API, right?
Well, yeah, if they had one. But what's interesting is even at this early version, I'm like. Because especially when you dig into, you know, so you got the whole guide, all that works great. There's a couple of features missing. I mean, typing with a keyboard to, like, search for a TV show, the best thing in the world. You know, like, trying to do that on the remote and, you know, scrolling around like you're adding your name to the high score of your Asteroids game in the, you know, in the 80s or something. You know, that's what it feels like to search with a remote, right? So doing it with even a virtual keyboard and you know, being able to search, all that's great. But the one part I found really kind of interesting is when you got into the on-demand stuff, this, you know, basically the stuff you can stream on your cable box. And I was like, this is the Netflix app, except it was a little cleaner, you know, the design and stuff. But it was like box art, you know. It's not what I expected. I was actually a little surprised. I was like, why is the one on the box so horrible? So like the one that you know, you use with your remote, it's so unuser-friendly, and even, you know, Bright House, you know, did the same thing. It's like they upgraded it, but it was like, you guys totally made this worse.
Well, it's the speed of innovation, isn't it? I mean, pushing things out over the iTunes store, you know, as slow as that seems to somebody who is used to publishing on the web, think about now having to push that through the corporate filter at the television company. It's probably so much faster to an app, because they're like, oh yeah, those guys with their mobile, whatever, just let them do whatever they want. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's like the wild, wild west for somebody who's a developer at a television company is the app environment. Even though it's got a couple of weeks of lag time, it's still way better than a couple of years of lag time.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Cause I mean, I don't do any embedded systems programming, and I can only imagine the kind of constraints those guys are dealing with. And then of course, at the same time, the type of folks, not to stereotype, you know, embedded systems programmers, but I can only imagine their UI skills are not obviously as sharp as they could be. But for all I know, it's just a limitation of the system, and they did the best damn UI they knew how. I mean, no one knowingly ships crap. It just seems to happen, you know, and you know, in cable, the set-top boxes have been notorious for bad UIs, you know. But seeing something this fluid, seeing something that when you dug into it, was like, I was like, you're poised, you're getting there, you know, you're going to be able to compete with the market leader. And somewhere there's a possibility, which I wouldn't have said, you know, before I saw this app, that they might actually win out in the end. I mean, they've got a couple of advantages, one of which is, you know, they fucking own the pipes, right? That's coming to my house.
Well,
so there's a certain level of, you know, not even trying to get into the net neutrality conversation, but, you know, there's a certain advantage to that. And then the flip side of that is the advantage of sort of already being ingrained. You know, like, I'm used to paying a cable bill. As much as I don't want to pay for the TV aspect and, you know, try to talk the family into switching, we still use it enough to, you know, because when you break it down, it's like, oh, the cable is only really $30,
Yeah,
and it's
well,
60 for the internet and this and that, right? And
here's something that I've been thinking about lately, and this is sort of like taking us in a left turn. But if you think about the things that you and I around a water cooler would have discussed, even 5 years ago, 10 years ago for sure, it would have been like robot chicken, for example. And that's something that you just assume everybody you know has cable, watches Cartoon Network. If they're anything like you, they stay up late at night and they watch cartoons. But now, like, I haven't had cable for 5 years, so I haven't seen any, recent episodes of any Adult Swim shows in the last 5 years. But if
Blasphemy.
somebody sends me a link to one online, I'll watch it for sure. I
Right.
love that stuff. I don't have like ready access to it, and I'm not a cable subscriber, so I can't get access to it.
Yeah, and Adult Swim in particular, they're doing something smart by trying to, the only place you can stream it is on AdultSwim.net or whatever their website is. But it's a weird, almost random potpourri type approach. I think that's part of trying to keep things fresh. And, if you dig far enough, I bet you could find every single episode on the site. But it's not laid out like, yo, don't buy the DVDs because here's all the episodes in order of
Right.
broadcast and, the way they were intended to be consumed. But
Well, Uncle Ted still
at the
wants to
same
make
time,
his money, right?
yeah. Yeah, exactly. But it's a shame to me because it, and kind of I think where you've been affected and what and in fact Adult Swim's one of the few things that I actually still DVR and why I haven't just, gone and said, "No, let's really we can actually live without this. Let's get, a Roku player, let's get an Apple TV and all of our media is in the living room and we can stream everything we want and buy the rest from, from trusted sources and and pop in some Hulu for the bad TV that, we want to watch, whatever. But that's like the one thing that there's no good source for without sticking a computer out there.
Well,
And
or
but it's,
waiting a year until it gets released on DVDs.
yeah, exactly. You can get it a little faster, but not quite as fast as like some other shows, but like on an iTunes or something. And I haven't really checked the availability on stuff like on like an Amazon Video or whatever. But there's still some holes, and it's when we get to that. Here's the internet delivered 14,000 channel net, 14,000 network, set top box, slash, internet relay, get it on your mobile, kind of everywhere, all encompassing. Like that'll be the new cable company. And right now, I'd almost like I said, after seeing that app from Comcast or whatever they call themselves now, Xfinity, I'm
Cable
like, you know
Town.
what? I'm like, you guys have a shot because unless Netflix has something else up their sleeve, they may have already achieved perfection as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
The streaming especially is by far the one of the best video experiences I think you can find on the internet, and
Well,
if you got
but
better one.
think about what you and I are doing right now that doesn't have anything to do with that old media. Already in the show, we have recommended Tumblevision, Dave Weiner, who does a great show called Rebooting the News. We have mentioned Daniel Pink, who puts out his own video content. Trent Reznor, I'm sure, does something online that we could publish or subscribe to, and probably some other sources that are there. And they're all, I guess you could say, they're niche. So I can recommend it to you could recommend it to me. But neither of us might be able to recommend it to, let's say, our mother or our significant other, in your case, your wife or my girlfriend. They're not going to be that interested in it. But it's more directed, but at the same time, the few people that I have on the planet who I can have that water cooler conversation about Dave Weiner with, they're, in my case, spread out all over the planet, or I have to go to like a nerdy meetup to see those other kinds of people. Or
Yeah.
obviously, there's the comment threads on the blogs themselves. Those are always useful places to have conversations if the people aren't a little too you know, first post kind of guys.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it depends on the blog. For a lot of, I don't know. I'm about to reboot my own blog, and I'm torn. I don't know if I'm going to enable comments. I think I may go with like the some. There's a trend for like say John Gruber during Fireball. He just like, I don't have comments because I just write your own blog. You know, if you want to reference mine, go for it. I do the same thing. I thought about doing that, and of course WordPress has the trackback feature, or doing it like Happy Cog rebooted their blog, and comments are only on Twitter, you know, and they're aggregated at the bottom, but they're not really stored with the content. And so it comes and goes. Like, there's some areas, and I've got a bunch of useful threads too that I'd either protect and just not enable for anything new, but I don't know. I've been trying to rethink how I want to do things there, because I want to clear this space. It's the new design's very minimal, and really create a space for me to write inside of, somewhere I could actually go every week, not just when I have something I really actually have to write down, because it's the thought about it is all consuming, and it's like I have to write it down or I'm never, I can't even move on, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, and I didn't mean to get all tangential on the validity of comments, because obviously there's plenty of useful comment threads out there, but there's also lots of other places to have conversations.
Well,
that,
and what I'm curious about though is like, let's say that it's this show, Our Yellow House, and there are two guys out there on the universe. They never met each other before, but they're looking to talk about something that we mentioned in this show. Obviously, there's Twitter. You could probably discuss it there. You know, maybe if we've got a Facebook page or something like that. But, you know, where are you going to find the other people that are interested in this show? It's really sort of like at our site, better than probably anywhere else. The people that are subscribing, there should be some way for them to sort of chime in and say, hey, I'm here.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are tools out there that will help you do that. Google Friends Connect, or the old school version would be My Blog Log, or I think IZEA has a tool that's really similar to something, you know, like, how do I know who else likes this? How do I know who else is listening without them performing some explicit action? You know, One neat thing, like we mentioned before, Last.fm, is Last.fm can tell me, hey, your buddy so-and-so just listened to Our Yellow House episode 2. Check it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also the like the tasteometer or whatever they call it, where the more, you know, there's a meter of how much of the same kinds of stuff you listen in common with people. Anytime I run across, you know, because I don't always include, like when I say, oh, here's my social media profiles, I don't always include Last.fm, mostly just because, you know, there's not a lot to do there from a social perspective for me. For me, it's just the audio scrobbler. But when I see one, and because thinking from that point of view, I always find it interesting to click over, because I pretty much just want to see how much of the tasteometer I light up with other people in the industry, or other interesting people I find. But, yeah, I like the way Tumblr does it, where you just can do a like, you know. I mean, there's some Tumblr themes you can enable comments on, but you can reblog it, which gives you a chance to quote from and add your own perspective on or some people use that as a way of just, you know, almost like a video response on YouTube is, you know. And then there's just the simple, you know, like, you know, button that just says, yo, I'm here, I found this interesting, you know. And for me, that's almost as valuable, at least as somebody who puts out content. It's almost like, for me, that's, I think, as much as I would ever want, you know. Some of the comments are great, and, you know, for on certain topics, like say a how to, you know, having people point out Erda and that type of stuff is, you know, it's pretty fantastic. But a lot of posts just, they don't really spark a lot of conversation anyway, and that's fine. You know, I know people, it's, in, you know, I know it's impact based on watching the link spread and having, you know, people just reply to me directly, say on Twitter, you know, and telling me what they thought about it. But one trip to YouTube will convince you that the world is doomed and comments are, you know, more noise than signal.
Yeah. Well, and just the other day, you know, I have on my YouTube channel, I will often make a video of something that I don't have anything to do with. I was just witnessing it. And somebody left a comment that was sort of in response to the people in the video. And I'm like, does he realize that they're never going to see this?
Yeah.
He just wanted to make noise about something. And he found, he found this video. He chose my channel to make really derogatory comments.
Yeah, that's sad. But it's funny. There's a I read a really, really interesting article, and I linked it. I linked to it just recently called – well, it wasn't really called Why Wasn't I Consulted? But that was the main driving force. And I'll Google up the author's name because it's definitely worth checking out. But the whole idea was that, you know, that he started off kind of saying, okay, the web is a customer service platform, but not in the way that you think. And it comes down to what he sort of referred to as the why wasn't I consulted paradigm, which essentially was and it shows up everywhere. It shows up in community sites like Metafilter, shows up in just comments. And, you know, and there's like all these levels of WWIC that, you know, it goes from everywhere from the simple like to I got to leave this comment, you know, whether the, you know, like it sounds like you just ran across kind of a troll, you know, more than someone. But it's this idea that in the, you know, in the internet medium in general, it's like there's this burning desire to share our opinion, to contribute to something in some way. And you know, and to leave your mark, if you will. And the whole article spent ftrain.com. It's the last article right now, but it was posted January 6th. And it goes into a really, really in-depth look at that kind of phenomenon. And the best sites balance that idea. You know, like instead of trying to, you know, provide a bunch of rules and that kind of thing, Metafilter has some guidelines and has empowered both with technology and permission, if you will, this idea that they are responsible for keeping the community the way, you know, in line with the guidelines. So as new people join, they, you know, they talk to them about it. And then as, you know, and as problems arise, they correct it on the go. But, they're, you know, when you look at the whole internet and even just this whole conversation, this whole podcast episode and it's almost like we've been talking about this the whole time, like, this desire to contribute, this desire to give back, sometimes for good or for evil, right? You know, I mean, sometimes a troll is just a troll, and you know, we shouldn't feed them. But it even encompasses like Clay Shirky's, you know, cognitive surplus. You know, people, you know, have a lot of free time, so that's why, you know, really detailed, you know, fan fiction, you know, universes exist. And, you know, any web series that wasn't produced, you know, by anybody in the business, you know, on YouTube is the, what it is and that kind of thing. But, and of course the internet provides sort of that medium to do it. And to do it with the kind of efficiency that we've never been able to see with this.
You know, the fan fiction is a really interesting subject that you could dive into for hours and hours, because it brings back into, you know, focus something that we talked about before, which is if you're Trent Reznor and you put out the sort of raw source files for your album, you're inviting people to create the musical version of fan fiction, which is take this sound and mash it up. Take this and make a new narrative out of it. Right now, the album in the current order with the current mix with all these elements tells you this story. But you could take these same tracks and turn them into something very different.
Mm-hmm.
With a minimal amount of skill and a great amount of vision. I think that's one of the problems is the reason why the cult of the amateur seems like such a compelling argument is because you have a lot of people with a low amount of skill and a low amount of vision, but a lot of that cognitive surplus.
Right.
And the people who have the high amount of vision, a lot of times those are the people who they've got a day job doing something else. So yeah, they don't have time to write a new version of the Harry Potter novel. But now with things that are like public domain, like Jane Austen novels, you've got the people that are writing the Jane Austen zombie novel.
Yep.
And you can't really say anything bad about that because they sell thousands and millions of copies, I'm sure.
And there's fucking zombies in it.
Hell yeah.
You know, yeah. This is exactly what I was getting at. And it's interesting because, you know, in a lot of niche communities, the consumer is the producer and vice versa. I know that's what's one of the things that's always held my attention about electronic music. And the more experimental you go, the more left field you go, the smaller the audience becomes, the more it's really just made up of other people who make the same kind of thing. You know, computers weren't always mass produced. They were hobbyist machines. I mean, Apple itself started with them just wanting to create something in the garage to emulate the stuff they couldn't afford and then create a kit out of it and a business on top of it. And of course, then they ship 14 million iPods in iPads in 9 months, you know, kind of thing. So it's like everything starts with a very tight 1-to-1 ratio with the consumer and the producer being sometimes, you know, the same person and also just being, you know, all that kind of community. And then eventually it seems like it becomes, or at least in the past it's been this way, right? It becomes the domain of only the highly skilled and have the time on their hands. And then, of course, the only ones that anybody's ever heard of were also had that vision that you spoke of. But the internet does create, you know, allows you know, folks like us to create tools for them to then, you know, not have a lot of skill. And then it only comes down to the amount of time and vision you can pour into it. Because
is that an iron triangle now too?
I think we have tripped over this. Yes, you know, like kind of like fast, good, and cheap. You know, I think vision, time, and skill really really do lock in that way, and you know, creative output I think is you know, just knowledge work in general and the kind of work we do, you know, because I mean, obviously it can be creative both on the high tech and high touch side, but yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up.
I think we found the end of our show.
I think we did. So 2 weeks from now, right, we should start here and see where this conversation leads again.
You bet, man.
Oh.
This has been an fantastic. Excellent scotch-induced hour of fun.
You have scotch?
Next time, my friend. Next time.
Yeah, I will. I need to scotch up here at the house. At least before we got into our new office, we always toasted shipping a project with scotch, and now we can kind of save them up and go do it on the weekends or whatever. But yeah. So 2 weeks from now I'll bring my own scotch.
And 2 weeks or so after that, I'll actually be in your presence, so we'll have to do something.
Oh yeah. Are you
other than, you know, go down to Jeffrey Dahmer's favorite hangout.
that's an interesting bar. Cool. Well, thank you, sir. This has been a nice diversion from my usual evenings, and I can't wait to do it.
To the three people who listened to this, I'm sure you got a lot out of it. and tell your friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, three people is, that's, I just imagine that's all that ever sees my stuff is just three people. One of them is my wife. So, well, cheers, sir, and until next time.
Say goodnight. See you soon.